Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the last session of the 2020 Queen's Council on Developmental Disabilities Family Support Conference. Hopefully everyone enjoyed the new version of how things have gone this week. Usually we do this in person, but I hope that the sessions have been informative. If you missed the session, they are available for a short period of time on our website at QCDD. The website is qcddny.org, and I'll put that in the chat later. And so you'll have access to both the video and the audio, as well as the presentations as they're available. So that you can, if you missed anything, you can see them. First, let me thank on our last day as well, our amazing ASL interpreters who have been doing an amazing job. Thank you very much. I'd also like to thank our Mandarin and Spanish interpreters as well. You've been amazing as well. And no technical hiccups so far, knock on wood. So with that said, today's presentation is being given by Chris Strieber, who is the Associate Director for Children's Services at the Interagency Council for Developmental Disability Agencies. Which is the umbrella agency of all service providers within the disability community who collectively advocates behind the scenes for us every day so that we can continue providing needed and services and so families have access to those services as well. And today's topic is a really important one, more than anything, especially during these trying times of COVID and trying to maneuver a system that's already been convoluted before a pandemic, but throwing it in makes it a little more difficult, I think. But with that said, let me one housekeeping thing. If you can turn off your cameras so that the ASL interpreters can be easily seen. Otherwise, you can use the pin feature on your Zooms. So, and then if you need interpreters, interpretation in Spanish or Mandarin, there's a globe on the bottom right hand of the screen, and you can just click your languages there. With that said, welcome, Chris, and the Zoom is all yours.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for the introduction, Pat. So just so you have some idea of my background, yes, I've been with the Interagency Council for about 8 years. I'm responsible and provide oversight to all of the preschool, early childhood programs through IAC, as well as school age programs. And I also provide support and technical assistance to all of the early intervention programs. We have about 45 or 50 preschool special ed providers that operate more than 100 school sites, and another 35 or 40 school age programs, which are state approved non-public schools that operate about another 50 sites and about another 17 to 20 early intervention agencies. So I'm very familiar with the subject. Before I came to IAC, I was the director of advocacy services for AHRC New York City, where I probably attended more than 1,000 to 2,000 IEP meetings. I represented parents in impartial hearings. So I'm very familiar with this topic. I've done a lot of training for parents and professionals on this. I'm going to try to give you some idea about what you really need to know to achieve success for your kids. My thing was stuck. So I'm going to try to give you some idea about how you can be effective at a meeting. I think it's really important for you to understand about the federal law, what you're entitled to and what you're not, how you prepare for a meeting, give you some idea who's going to be there, who should be there, what should happen. And then I have some real concrete sort of strategies and tips in terms of how to prepare for the meeting. So what's the definition of an advocate? An advocate is one who pleads the cause of another, someone who defends or maintains a cause or supports and promotes the interest of a cause or a group. So as parents, when you're at an IEP meeting, you are the advocate for your child. You are the one that's going to be there to plead their cause. No matter who else is at that meeting, you're the only one that truly has the interest of your child primary. Everybody else can be impacted. I'm going to skip this sort of link to a YouTube video, but you can always watch it. It's sort of a comical sketch about what an IEP meeting looks like. But I can tell you that what happens in this meeting happens all too often, especially in New York City. So when you think of an IEP meeting and you hear you have to go to one, what do you think? Do you think it's going to be cooperative? You're going to have a partnership and a teamwork? Is that been your experience? I think for some families, it is. More than likely, it probably is if they have someone representing them or assisting them with a meeting. And then a lot of families find they're in a battle, it's a fight, and they have nothing but challenges when they go to these meetings. And their experience is that the committees on special education or their child's school wants to limit services. They'd prefer that parents just kind of went away and stopped bothering them and asking for things. And then you have other parents where the committee on special ed will just kind of give them whatever they want, and they want to avoid conflict. So that's usually the dynamic that you deal with in these meetings, one or the other. And far too many parents, I think, would say that it's more likely that they experience someone wants to limit the services their child gets, or they want the parents to just kind of go away and not fight anymore, not bother them. And I'm going to try to help you figure out how you can get what you need for your child and make sure that your rights are respected and not violated, which happens, again, far too often. In order to really be effective when you go to an IEP meeting, you need to understand about the federal law. If you don't understand what the federal law is, you really are at a huge disadvantage in terms of being able to talk effectively at a meeting, being able to hold people accountable, and making sure that people are responsible for their actions and decisions on behalf of your child. So what is the federal law about? So the federal law is about 46 years old. It was originally written by Congress in 1975, and it's been signed by a number of presidents since then, all of which have basically reauthorized the law. The law was reauthorized, I think it's almost 20 years ago now, hasn't been reauthorized in a very long time. It covers all children from the age of 3 all the way up to 21. And it also has a component that was added that covers children from birth to 3. So both early intervention and preschool special ed and school age services are all covered by this federal law that entitles all children to an education. Prior to 1975 in the United States, there were 1 million children who weren't entitled to any special education services at all. So if you had 2 children, your son did not have any kind of disability and your daughter did, your son would be entitled to go to school and receive an education, but there was no law that entitled your daughter to be able to go to school. And so Congress decided that they had to come up with a law that would protect all children and provide them with the right to an education that would meet their needs. And so this is basically what the federal law says, is that to ensure that all children with disabilities have available to them a free and appropriate public education that emphasizes special education and related services designed to meet their unique needs and to prepare them for education, employment, and independent living in the future. And that's the key to this whole piece of law, is that the goal is to educate your children so that they will be able to have a good quality of life when they leave school, that they could potentially get a job or maybe get a supported job, that if they wanted to go to college, they would be able to do that if they could, and that they would be able to live as independent a life as they are entitled to, just like everybody else. So the real issue around the law is, what does it all mean? And for parents, it's a little complicated because it's been written by lawyers, obviously. And so it's always a challenge to interpret what the law means. So this is exactly the language that every child, regardless of disability, is entitled to a free and appropriate public education, or FAPE, F-A-P-E. There's a few words that you should kind of get into your head when you get involved in special education or advocating for your child. One of them is FAPE. My child is entitled to a free and appropriate public education. But one of the challenges is, what is meant by all of that language, right? So this is what the interpretation of the law, that a free and appropriate public education is required by the act, meaning the federal law, and it's tailored to meet the unique needs of the handicapped child. Now, this language is about 45 years old, so people don't usually use the word handicapped anymore, but that was the language that was in the law when it was written. And it also talks specifically about an individualized education plan. And this individualized education plan, or IEP, must be developed each year. And it has to be reviewed once a year. For many of you, that doesn't always happen, I'm sure, is that you don't feel that the IEP is reviewed every year, not really adequately. So what does the word appropriate mean? So the definition of the word appropriate came about because a parent took their child's case. It was actually their daughter's case, and she had a hearing impairment. And they took her daughter's case, her name was Amy Rowley, and they took the case all the way to the United States Supreme Court, because the school district told the parent, well, we don't really have to give your child so much. We'll give them some support, but you know what, Amy's doing really well, so we don't believe that we have to provide what you are asking us to provide, which was a sign language interpreter in the classroom. And so in this court case, the United States Supreme Court decided that in order for a program to be appropriate, the program had to be reasonably calculated to provide some educational benefit to the child. And the court said that the federal law basically requires that a school district has to provide a basic floor of opportunity. It has to be individually designed to provide some educational benefit to the child. So for almost 40 years, that was the standard by which most parents could go in and argue, you know, my child needs these services, they're going to provide some educational benefit. However, it was easier for the school district at the time to just kind of say, well, the child's making some progress, so that's enough. And on March 22nd, 2017, the United States Supreme Court had heard a case. It was called Andrew F. v. Douglas. And in this case, the Supreme Court had to decide, was in fact that definition of appropriate, meaning how the law was being interpreted all these years, did it actually make sense? Was it actually constitutional in terms of the decision that had been made before? And in this new case, the parent argued, and this was a case for a child who had autism, and the parent was offered services from the school district, and the parent said, that's not enough. My child's not going to make any progress. And the school district argued, based on the previous court case, well, the child was making a little bit of progress, so that was enough. And the Supreme Court, in an 8-0 decision, one of the only unanimous decisions the court has ever made in terms of any kind of education case, ruled that that wasn't enough. and that the new standard was determined by the court to be that in order for a school district to meet its obligation under the law, a school must offer an IEP that is reasonably calculated to enable a child to make progress appropriate in light to the child's circumstance. Again, that's kind of, you know, vague language, but really from a parent perspective, what it means is the IEP has to be written based on reports. It has to be based on documentation about how your child is doing. And the IEP has to have what are called highly appropriate goals, meaning the goals have to be to allow your child to make progress based on where their functioning level is, how they are able to achieve learning. So it says the essential function of an IEP is to set out a plan pursuing academic and functional advancement. So if someone says to you, well, you know, the child just made, you know, some progress, you know, but you think the child should be advancing a lot more than what they're doing, that they're much more capable, and you have a report from a doctor or someone else that says that they are, you can challenge the school district by saying, you know what, I don't believe you're offering my child an appropriate education. It's not anywhere near where they should be. And so the new Supreme Court case, Andrew v. Douglas, gives you that right. It gives you an expansive right in regards to what your child's option should be in regards to their achievement, what they can achieve. And the Supreme Court in the Rowley case also said that Congress said that, you know, when we wrote this law, we had certain requirements. There were certain rights and responsibilities, rights of parents and responsibilities of school districts to ensure that children's rights were not violated. Very specific criteria. There were timelines established. There were other requirements in terms of development of the IEP and other things. That compliance is seen as important as offering this appropriate education. So if a school district failed to comply with all these requirements, they are also violating the law. And then the court also decided that it's really up to the educators to make the decisions on behalf of children. It's not a court expertise. It's not what they know best in terms of deciding what kind of service, what kind of teaching a child should receive. So for example, there's been a lot of cases around applied behavior analysis or ABA for children with autism. The courts have said that it should be an educator's decision about that and not the court making those decisions. So you have to be very clear in terms of having documentation to back up what you're asking for. The other thing that the law has always required, and it still does, is that every child that receives services under this law is entitled to have an individualized education program that's written for their child. And it must be reviewed every single year. The most important thing about an individualized education plan is that it has to be your child's plan. So when you look at what's written on that IEP and you don't see your child there, you don't think it's about your child, but it's about every other child who's in first grade in New York City, that's not a plan that meets the requirements of the law. That plan should be reflective of who your child is. It should show their strengths and their challenges. It should have goals that you've had input in. An IEP is a process that is developed with the parent in partnership with the school. Far too many IEPs are written and then handed to the parent and said, here's your child's IEP without any input. That's a violation of law. Congress envisioned that parents would be a part of the team of people who help write this document and have input into the document. So if you go to a meeting and they give you an IEP, you should have a right to have input into that document so that it's not final, so that they can make changes to it if they don't meet the needs you have. You may want your child to be able to sit on your lap and listen while you read a book. Why can't that be a goal that they would then be able to do that? Maybe your child can't communicate effectively. You want to make sure that one of the goals is going to work on their speech, for example. So everything in that IEP should be what you want your child to achieve. You should have input in that document. If you don't, then you should demand a right to that. School districts should not be writing IEPs without giving you an opportunity to give input. And then the other element within the law, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, is that all children in the law are entitled to be placed in the least restrictive environment, or LRE. So one thing you want to learn is FAPE, which is FAPE. You want to remember IEP, Individualized Education Program. But if your child's name is Juan, then it should be Juan's IEP, or it should be Jacob's IEP, or Sarah's IEP. It shouldn't just be an individualized education plan. It should be focused on your child. And then the least restrictive environment says your child should not receive more special education than what they need to learn and make progress. So if you put your child into a special class, but then you believe that they've done well and that they don't need the level of support that they're getting, but they're doing well, you can say under least restrictive environment, my child doesn't need that much support. Maybe you want them in a regular class and you want a special education teacher to go into the class and support them. That could be a least restrictive environment. Basically, special education is not a place. It is a service that your child is entitled to. And again, you should have input into what that service looks like for your child. Least restrictive environment also says, if there's a school closer to your child's home, they should go there. Because the original intent of the federal law was to make sure that a child would normally go to the school that they would go to if she didn't have a disability. And then that child would get the services they need in that building, in that school, just like every other child who lives in that neighborhood with you. For many years, that wasn't the case. For many years, children had to be transported somewhere else to go to a specialized school. And there weren't children in that school who didn't have a disability. That's changed a lot since then. But that's changed because parents have demanded those changes and advocates have demanded those changes. And you as a parent have a right to demand and question everything about the document that they write about your child. And I'll talk about that in a little bit. But least restrictive environment is important. If you think your child is doing really well and maybe they don't need as much support as they were getting, you have a right to question that. And then you have a set of rights that are established by the law. So the first right you have is a right to be informed and knowledgeable about all actions taken on behalf of your child. How do you achieve that? Well, informed and knowledgeable means that the school or the Committee on Special Ed can take no action to change your child's services, change the IEP, or move your child to another school without your knowledge, meaning they have to invite you to a meeting. You have a right to be involved in discussions around that. They can't do anything without notifying you. In terms of knowledgeable, you have a right to have access to your child's educational record. You can't be knowledgeable about what's happening unless you know about the reports that have been written, unless you know about what people have said about your child, what kind of progress they're making, how they're doing. Those are usually the evaluations and reports and progress reports that professionals write about your child. When I do these trainings for parents, I tell them, if you think about the fact that all of this stuff is a book, basically, an educational book that's been written about your child, it's your child. You have a right to a copy of that book. And the way you do that is you send in a written request, now more than likely by email, but you ask for copies of all the reports. You have a legal right to them. And the school district, for the most part, will give them to you if you ask. They will not give them to you if you don't ask, because the law doesn't require that. What the law requires is that they have to give you the individualized education program. They have to give you a copy of that. Everything else you have to ask for. You have a right to participate in all meetings regarding any evaluations or placements for your child. The right to participate says they have to invite you. It doesn't say they can't meet without you. So basically, they have to send you notice. They're going to have an IEP meeting on November 15th. They've met their requirement under the law. That's all they have to do. If you get a notice and you don't go to the meeting on November 15th, they will have a meeting about your child if you're not there. So one of my first very strong recommendations is that you make sure you can get to that meeting. You make sure you can go. And we're going to talk about going to that meeting. The other right you have is you have a right to consent. They have to get your consent before any evaluations, and it has to be written, and they have to get your written consent before they change your child's placement or before they put your child in a new placement. The power that parents have, the power that you have, is you don't give your consent unless you agree. As long as you don't consent, the school district has to try to work with you to get you to agree to consent. And that's the power you have. If you sign that consent, you've agreed. District doesn't need to worry about you anymore. They'll move on to the next family. So don't take that right lightly. And remember, it's a very important right that you have. And then the other right you have under the law is you have a right to disagree. You know, Congress thought that if they give a school district the power to make decisions about your child and to place your child, for example, in a class that only has students with disabilities in it, they wanted to ensure that parents had a right to say, no, I don't agree. And so you have a right to challenge. You have a right to disagree with anything that's in the IEP. You have a right to disagree with the services your child is getting, and you have a right to disagree with the school your child is placed in. With all of the rights that I just kind of gave you, are responsibilities attached to it. Remember, how are you informed and knowledgeable? Well, they have to let you know about a meeting, but you have to make sure they have your correct email. They have to have your phone number. They have to have a way to get in touch with you. The right to participate. They'll invite you to a meeting. You have to show up, you have to attend. Parental consent, you have to give your written consent. And then the right to challenge, you don't agree. You have a right to ask for another meeting. You have a right to ask for any form of due process. So you could ask for a conflict resolution meeting. If you're not satisfied, you can ask for an impartial hearing, which is sort of like going to special ed court. And you can get yourself a lawyer or an advocate to help you fight them. All of those things are options for you. And then when you go to the meeting, you have another set of rights that are built into this. One of them is you can bring anybody you want to that IEP meeting. School district can't tell you you can't bring somebody. You need to notify them typically that, again, you're coming with somebody. I never went to a meeting unless the parent told a representative from the school or the committee on special ed that I was going to be there. And you determine who you consider to be knowledgeable or an expert on your child. The school district can also bring whoever they want to the meeting. The time and location is supposed to be mutually convenient to the parent. So if they tell you the meeting's on November 15th, but you have to be at work because your boss isn't going to let you off, you have a right to ask for another date. And you have a right to ask for another time. And the district is expected to make every effort to try to reach out to you to let you know that the meeting is going to happen. And the district is required to document those efforts. So if they called you, they have to write down when they spoke to you and they told you about a meeting. If they sent you an email, they should keep a copy of it. So that if on November 15th, you found out that they had a meeting and you didn't even know about it, you can say to the school district, I never got notice about this meeting. How did you let me know? And they better be able to produce some documentation. The one thing that the law does give the district at a meeting is they make the final decision. So as a parent, you have a right to give your opinion. You can argue with them. You can challenge them, but the law says they make the final decision. So at meetings, when I would represent parents, we could have a big argument and a disagreement. And usually at the end, I would say, you have your opinion, and we as the family and the representative have another. We will pursue due process then. We don't agree with you. Sometimes they might try to then re-discuss the case or reopen it. Other times they know that then the parent was going to go to a conflict resolution or an impartial hearing. I think that school districts and schools want to work in partnership with parents. That's their goal. And sometimes they forget those things. So I think it's important just kind of for you to know, and what, you know, when I do trainings for school districts and for teachers, I kind of tell them some of these things. But always remember that you as the parent want what's best for your child. The people you meet with may not agree with you. You may think that your child needs a type of service and they may not want to give it to you. Sometimes you may be very angry at these meetings. And sometimes you're just kind of not always angry at them, but that, you know, you have to go to them and ask them for help, because not every parent has to do that. And you want them to help you, and they don't seem to be listening. It's a challenge sometimes to be able to help them understand what it is that you want or you believe your child needs. And I'm going to give you some suggestions about how to get those points across in a few minutes. I usually suggest, if possible, to parents, especially ones that I used to work with, if you can have a meeting with your child's teacher or school before this other meeting, to try to get an agreement, or at least let them know what you disagree with and try to talk it out. It's always better than going to a committee on special ed meeting and having a big disagreement right there. And sometimes, you can convince your child's teacher or someone else who's going to support you to be able to sort of say things that will back up your position in a meeting. That's always the strongest position to be in, if you can do that. And then I think it's important for parents to know that if a teacher is trying to get your child services, sometimes they have to talk about all the things your child can't do in order for them to get those services. Because if they go to a meeting and they talk about all the wonderful things your child can do, someone will say, oh, well, they don't really need any services then, do they? I usually tell parents to talk about what are your child's strengths and not their weaknesses, but the challenges in learning. You know, why is it hard for your child to learn? Maybe they can't read as well as the other kids. Maybe they can't comprehend the same way. Maybe they can't keep up with all the other kids. And then it's always powerful for a parent to talk about what their child is doing at home or give very clear examples, observable examples. I sit down with my child and I try to read to them and they can't sit with me for more than a minute. Well, I want the IEP to start to help my child be able to attend or sit with me while I read to them for maybe more than a minute. That's very visible. Someone can understand what that is. So that's just kind of an example. What happens at these meetings, the IEP team has to make sure that your child continues to have a disability under the law. Because the law says a child has to have a 12-month delay in an area. So they're not speaking the same way all the other kids would be, and they have a delay of almost 12 months, or a 33% delay in one area, or they have a defined disability. And I'm going to give you those disabilities in a minute. And then, does this disability, does the thing that is not allowing your child to learn like everybody else, is it impacting her or his educational performance? They're not doing as well as they could normally do. And there's a lot of reasons. If a child isn't able to talk as well as other kids, their speech isn't as clear. They're not going to be able to participate the same way in a classroom. If your child isn't able to process information the same way, they're not going to learn as quickly as other kids. So there's things that will cause delays. And there are 13 categories under federal law in terms of disabilities for kids. Your child's IEP, in order for them to receive special education services, has to identify your child as having one of these 13 disabling conditions. Parents sometimes get upset because, oh, my child doesn't have a disability, or I don't want to have them labeled. It's important to understand that this is an educational disability category. This is not a medical diagnosis. But for some, they do require a doctor to sign off. Like for a child who has autism, usually you have to have a doctor say that the child has autism. For some of the others, a teacher could say it, a psychologist could say it. It could be evidenced by tests that they've done on your child, evaluations that they've done to find out. Your child could have more than one. Your child could have only one. But if your child is receiving special education services and they're over the age of 5, they're going to have one of these disability categories. If your child is under the age of 5, then New York State regulation says they are a preschool student with a developmental disability. And they're not going to have one of these categories of a disability yet. At age 5, they will be given one. And again, you may disagree with this. You may not like this. And maybe you decide to get another evaluation from a private evaluator. Or maybe you ask your child's doctor, this is what they're saying about my child. Does this make sense to you? Or do you think my child may have some other issue that is impacting their learning? So all of those things are there. If your child is classified as having autism, usually you have to have a doctor give that diagnosis. If your child is classified as having an emotional issue, an emotional disturbance, that's what it's called in regulation, your child should not have any other reason that's impacting their learning. So if your child has a learning disability, school districts should not be classifying them as having an emotional disturbance because they have a learning disability that's impacting their ability to learn. So that's always very important to keep in mind. And then the IEP. So we kind of have gotten to the point where someone says your child does in fact have a disability. They have a disability under education law that says that they're not doing as well as everybody else. And they need some support to be able to learn better, to be able to be participate in the classroom with the other kids. They need to learn things that will help them better take care of themselves, maybe live more independently, all of those things. So when they make that decision, then they have to develop an individualized education plan for your child. Many of you probably already have these plans, and each of the plans have to have all of these components in it that are on the screen. It's supposed to be developed with the teacher, but you as the parent are a key member of the team who helps decide and develop the individualized education plan. Some of the elements of the plan clearly are going to be done by professionals. There's going to be a statement about how your child is doing, your present levels of performance. So that tells us what your child can do and where they are having difficulty in terms of learning. And usually that's based on what grade they're in. So if your child's in second grade, they're going to look and they're going to say, every child who's in second grade is expected to do all of these things. How many of those can your child do? And how many of them they're not ready to do yet? There's going to be a statement that says, this is where we want your child to get to at the end of this year. So an IEP is 1 year in duration, and they write a set of goals. Your child is going to make this level of progress. There's usually areas of goals that address every area of challenge for your child. If that's not the case, then the IEP is not written right. There should be information in the IEP that says how your child is going to participate with other children who don't have disabilities in the building. Are they going to attend all of the regular things that all the kids in the school go to? So if there's an event in the auditorium, is your child going to be able to go? Are they going to eat lunch in the cafeteria with all the other kids? Are they going to attend gym with all the other kids? Maybe your child is really good in math. Couldn't your child be in a regular math class for part of the day then and learn with maybe some support? So all of those things should be in there. The IEP should also say when the services are going to start. So if the services say your child is going to get speech therapy starting on November 8th, your child should get speech therapy on November 8th. And there also has to be a way for the teacher, as well as you, as the mom or the dad or the grandmother or the grandfather or aunt or uncle, some way for you to see if your child is making progress. There's got to be a criteria. And it should be simple enough so that anybody who picked up the IEP would know exactly what the goal is and then would be able to determine if the child met that goal or not. Whenever I went to a meeting at a school or I met with a teacher or if I did a special ed hearing, I would always ask, point out the goals the child has achieved this year. If your child achieves very few of those goals, then maybe the special education program is failing to provide an appropriate education to your child. And that's when you ask those questions. And here's some more information. How do we decide what a child needs, right? So we look at the level and type of service. We evaluate if it's appropriate. Special education can be a flexible service, but it's based on the needs of the child, not based on what's available in the school your child goes to. So if that school can't meet your child's needs, your child has a right to go to another school. I'm going to skip through some of this stuff, but these are the people who should be at the meetings. And again, this is also certain elements of who should be at the meeting. Basically, if someone isn't going to be at a meeting, the school district has to notify you. So if the teacher can't be there for some reason, they're going to have to give you notice in writing and ask your permission for the teacher not to be there. If you want the teacher there or you want the speech therapist there, don't agree to it and tell them you want that person at the meeting. The school can't make changes to the IEP without your permission. If you agree with the change, they talk to you on the phone and you say it's okay, they're going to ask you to sign a consent to do that. So all of those things are there. So how do you effectively advocate an IEP meeting? So I have two things. I say you got to do your homework and you have to remember what are called your ABCs for your meeting. So how do you do your homework? So anytime that I went to an IEP meeting, I did all of these things. And I have been training parents to do a lot of these things over the years. And parents tell me they've gotten so much more than they did before they did this stuff. So I think you have to have a game plan. You have to have a strategy when you go to the meeting. You have to be organized and you have to justify your position. If you're going in and you're saying, my child needs more speech therapy because their speech really is not good and they can't really understand what I'm saying to them, you need to have evidence to back that up. You need to manage the meeting, and I'm going to explain how you do that. You need to give examples. You need to try to get a win-win. So you should always be ready to compromise at some level. You need to think about your outcome. You need to have realistic goals, and you always are going to keep your child in mind. So in this world right now, where we're dealing with remote meetings, I want you to remember a few things. Check your technology before the meeting. Make sure your Wi-Fi is going to work. Make sure your device is charged, especially if you're doing it remotely from home. If something happens, you should have a backup plan. I'm going to call into the meeting and ask the school district or the school if you can have a phone number that you can call them at if something happens. All of a sudden, my power goes out or my Wi-Fi goes out, and that happens a lot. And if you have an advocate coming, you need to make sure that you know how to communicate with the advocate during the meeting, because normally they'd be sitting next to you, but that may not be the case. You want to make sure you mute yourself if you're not speaking, because you don't want to say something that you regret because you don't like what's being said in the meeting. Be aware if your camera is on, because the people can see your face and they can like, oh no, I don't like that. So they can see all those things. And then you need a plan for how you're going to sign a document. In this slide, I have a picture of a chessboard. And that's what I used to tell parents to think about these meetings. They're like a chess match. And you want to think ahead. You want to say, if I'm going to ask for this, what might the district say to me? So if I'm asking for some more speech service, or I want my child to go to a different class that's smaller because I think they need support, what is the school going to say? Oh, your child's doing really well. So you want to sort of think about how they might respond to the moves you make. And that's why it says on this, the tactics mean doing what you can with what you have. So how do you do that? So there are three things you need to know when you go to a meeting. I always asked my parents when I represented them, what would you love to get? You know, if I could get you this, this would be great. So I'd love to have speech 5 days a week for my child. Individually, I'd love that. That would be great. And then I usually say to them, what can you live with? You know, if I got you 3 times a week individually, is that something that you think would be okay for your child? I know you'd like to get it 5 times, but we can't get you 5. How about 3? There's your ability to negotiate now. You kind of know what you'd love to get. You know what you can live with. So those are the two things. And the last thing you want to know is, I'm not going to accept this. So if they say, your child doesn't even need speech anymore, that's when you say, you know what, that's not okay. I'm going to fight that. If you know those three things, you have at least an ability in the meeting to be able to set your bottom line and to let them know what it is that you would really like to get. You never tell them what you're going to live with. So I'm here. I want my child to receive speech 5 times a week. Maybe they come back and they say, well, we can't really give you 5. How about 3? That may be fine for you. And you just got what you wanted. So that's kind of a strategy that you always want to think about. And then the other thing that I think is very important are these two things. You always want to keep in mind that you never want to burn a bridge because you may have to go back across it. Meaning you're going to have to work with that child, your child's teacher all year. Maybe it's the same teacher next year. You don't want to say something to them that gets them so upset that they don't really want to work with you or your child again. And then I always used to tell professionals, and I even told parents, that you have to remember that it's not personal, it's about your child. People used to yell at me, they used to scream at me. I knew it wasn't personal, and I was there to do everything I could to help the child I was representing. If I made it personal, I would have not been able to do those things. If I would have started yelling at people or screaming at people or getting really, really angry, I wouldn't have helped the child. And sometimes as a parent, it's very hard to do that. And sometimes it's best to have someone with you who can support you, like a friend or a relative, someone who can kind of help calm you down and focus you so that you don't burn that bridge. Because again, you may have to go back across it, especially if it's someone from the Committee on Special Ed. That person may be, you may be dealing with that person for the entire time your child is in special ed and you live in that district. So just keep those things in mind. How do you justify your position? You justify it by reading everything. So you're going to look at all the reports and you're going to highlight the points that back up what you're asking for. If the reports don't back it up, then maybe you need to get another evaluation from someone and get a report that backs up what you want for your child. I used to go through the reports and I'd use a highlighter and I'd highlight each of the things I wanted to say about a child. And that made a big difference. And I think it's important for you as parents to always keep this in mind, is that your goal should be helping the person you're meeting with to give you what you want. You want to give them permission to give you what you want. So if I'm an administrator and my boss looks at all of the services I've given to your child and they say, why did you do that? That's too much. We don't give that much to anybody. I can pick up a bunch of reports and I can say, the parent came in with a folder that looked like this. And it was full of all these reports and evaluations. And I, as a professional, can justify what I did for your child. That's what you need to do. You need to think that way. Because as an administrator, I like my job. I don't want to lose my job. And I know that my boss is going to ask me at the end of the day why I made the recommendations I did for each of the children that day. So that's why you have to think about giving them permission. And then you want to establish that you're the expert of this, of your child. Most professionals will come into a meeting and they'll, oh, we know best. Well, they really don't. Nobody who works with your child knows your child like you do. You know everything about your child from their birth. Nobody knows that. An evaluation of your child, which is what most people do who sit in these meetings, is a snapshot in time. That's all it is. If your child was evaluated today on October 30th, what I know about your child is how they did today on October 30th. So I have a photo. You can remind them you have the photo album. You know everything about your child. You know what's worked. You know what hasn't worked. Maybe they received early intervention services. So you know what worked in early intervention. If they went through preschool special ed, you know how that worked. And now they're in kindergarten, for example, and your child is having challenges. You can talk about all those things. You may be asked to tell them about your child, how they were doing, how they were doing at each age. You may be asked to talk about what services they had been getting over the years. So all of those things are things that you can bring to those meetings. When you're in the meeting, again, you want to establish yourself. You're the expert here. You know your child. And then you want to sort of figure out who's in the room with you. And then you want to also figure out who's in charge. So it's important, if they don't do it, ask them to introduce themselves to you, even if it's remotely. You want to find out who everybody is. You want to find out their title. And you want to find out if they've seen your child. Your child's teacher might be there, but there might be other people. You don't even know who they are. And that's important for you to know that. And then you want to find out who the decision maker is in the room. That's usually an administrator or the school psychologist. It's easy enough to figure it out because usually it's the person who is leading the meeting for the school district or the school. And then how do you advocate at this meeting? So you're going to be invited to the meeting, right? And you're going to go. So before the meeting, I almost always suggested to a parent that you check the date of your child's last IEP. The meeting has to take place within 1 year. That's a requirement by law. That's not an option. And remember when I started this, I told you this is the federal law. So if someone is violating your child's rights, they're not violating New York City law. They're not violating New York state law. They're violating federal law written by Congress, signed by the President of the United States. So you should hold people accountable to this. You should absolutely plan to attend the meeting. If the date's not convenient, you should ask for a change in the date. My advice to parents has always been, don't just call up and say, I can't make it. Call up and say, I can't make it on November 5th, but I could make it on November 7th and 9th. Can we schedule a meeting now? That way, you don't have to wait for them to send you a letter in the mail or an email telling you when they're going to get around to meeting with you. Because I can tell you sometimes it'll take a while. Because once you stop this clock, and that's what it's called, there's a time clock involved, they no longer have to comply with the time clock. That's why it's important for you to make sure that you're making that request. You want to look at all the evaluations and you want to look at your child's previous IEP. Maybe go through it and look and ask yourself, has my child met any of these goals? If they have, that's great. And maybe you put some check marks next to it and you identify which ones they did. And then you look and you say, my child didn't achieve any of these goals. So that's something you're going to bring up at the meeting. And then prepare a list of questions. A list of questions is a very important thing because when you're in the meeting, you can check them off, or you can make sure that before you leave, you look back at your list of questions and you make sure they're answered. Remember, these people have a job that you meet with because your child has a disability. And part of their job is to respond to your questions, to answer your questions, to help you understand because the law requires they do that. You're a participant, you're a partner in the learning and the education of your child. And their job is to make sure that you have that opportunity. if you need an interpreter, my recommendation is you bring one, bring someone who you trust. I've been at meetings where I knew the parent spoke Spanish. I know some Spanish. I can tell you that the translation of what the teacher said to what the translator said to the parent was brief and didn't even match most of what was said. So I tell a parent, if possible, bring somebody who you trust to interpret for you. If not, you have a right to ask in advance for someone to be there. And then I always tell parents, bring a picture of your child. You want them to know this is the meeting about your child today. Because you should think about the fact that many of these schools have meetings every 15 or 20 minutes all day long. And they forget about the fact that it's about your child. Most of these people are professionals who went in to work with kids. They could have been working for a computer company or someplace else, but they wanted to work with children. However, after you've been having meeting after meeting, or you've sometimes become an administrator, you forget that it's about this individual child. And the way you change that dynamic is you take out a picture of your child. If you're in person, have a small picture and hand it around and let people see it. If you're at a meeting, you can bring a picture, and I've seen parents do it, a 5x7, an 8x10 in a frame, and they put it on the table. It's a lot harder for someone to say no to you when they're looking at your child. It's a very powerful thing. And some parents buy a loose leaf binder that has a plastic sleeve in it. They put a big picture of their child in the front of it, and they put all the reports and everything about their child inside of it. People at school districts are very impressed by that. And what you have to remember is most parents don't do these things. You want to be seen as the parents that doing these things. You're going to get more for your child because most parents don't do these things. At the meeting, so when you go to the meeting, right? You want to dress like a professional. You shouldn't have to understand that, but it makes a difference. It makes a very big difference. One parent told me once that this is the meeting. This is her business meeting once a year on behalf of her child. And she dresses like she's going to a business interview or she's going to church. And it matters how you dress. It shouldn't, but it does. When I used to go to these meetings, even in the summer, I would dress in a suit and the people on the other side of the table would be wearing jeans and a t-shirt. I would intimidate them. And that would be purposeful because I was there representing a child and this meeting was very important. It sends a message. Be on time. It's very important to be on time. If you're not there, they're going to have the meeting without you. The meeting starts at 10 o'clock, but you're stuck on the train and you don't get there till 10:30. The meeting may be over by the time you get there. So plan on getting someplace early. Put in your appointment book or in your phone. If the meeting is 10:30, put 10:15 to give yourself a window of time in between. Be supportive to the people there. It should say be supportive to the professionals. Try as much as you can. Maintain an educational file. That's the idea that I was saying in regards to your child, having those reports there, having everything in there. It's very powerful when the school district doesn't have a report and you as the parent can pull out a copy and hand it to them. Ask questions if you don't understand something. And remember to treat the members of the team with respect. Listen to them. Don't accept a decision unless it's explained to you and you understand about it. You may not agree, but you absolutely have a right to know why they decided what they did. So if they tell you, well, we can't give you that, you can ask them why. Ask each person in the room to identify themselves. I think I told you that, and write their names down. bring copies of the child, your child's evaluations, and take notes. It's a very powerful thing if you have a pad and pen and you're writing things down. I guarantee you, people you meet with will pay more attention to you, even if they don't know what you're writing, because you're writing something down, which means you can write their name, you can write something down about the way they've spoken to you. And if you have their names and you know who they are, you can write a letter to their boss, you can send an email to their boss if you don't like how they treated you. That's why when you ask for people's names, a really good tip is ask them to spell their name for you. Even if you know if it's really a simple name, still, oh, your name is Jones, J-O-N-E-S, and they know then that you know who they are. It's a lot harder to call and say, well, I met with someone and I didn't like the way they treated me. Well, if I can say I didn't like how Mr. Jones treated me and he was the school psychologist, now he can be held accountable. Request copies of any of the new evaluations or reports. Sometimes you're at a meeting and suddenly they pull out a new report that you've never seen. Tell them before you leave, I'd like a copy of that. And then also tell them, I'm not going to sign anything unless I know exactly what you are asking me to sign. And then also review what they wrote. So kind of review what was decided at the meeting. Oh, so my child's going to get speech now 3 times a week individually, right? We agreed that my child's going to be in a class of 12. Is that correct? That way, you don't leave the meeting and then get a document in the mail, an IEP, that says something completely different than what you understood. So it's important to make sure you do those things. And then after the meeting, you should get a copy of the IEP and review the IEP. Make sure you know what's in it. If it's something where you don't agree or you didn't agree, call them up and say, I don't know why that's there. Is this a mistake? If you don't agree at all, you want to file for a hearing or conflict resolution or ask for another meeting. You want to keep a copy of the IEP. And then I think it's very important for you to look at what's on that IEP. And if there's a date, so if it says that on Monday, December 1st, for example, your child is supposed to get speech therapy, you should call the school on December 1st and not ask if my child got speech that day, who the child's speech therapist is, when they're going to get it, and is it possible to observe a session at some point or talk with the speech therapist? Because if you just call up the school and ask, they're more than likely going to say, oh yeah, every child in the school is getting speech. But if you ask who the speech therapist is, when your child gets it, someone's going to have to go research if in fact your child is getting those services. It's just another sort of suggestion in terms of how to make sure that people make sure that what they tell you they're going to give your child, you get. And then if you have questions, call your child's teacher and talk to them. That's the first person you should always talk to, is your child's teacher, and ask them what questions you have. If they don't answer them for you, then you go to a supervisor or someone else. Let me see how we're doing. Okay. And then I think it's really important for you to say thank you to people who have helped you. Most professionals are never thanked. And if you send a thank you card or you thank them, they will remember it. You shouldn't have to do these things, but they matter. You know, if you take the time and send a thank you card to someone at a school who was really nice to you, they're going to put that thank you card over their desk. They're going to tell other people in the school, oh, Mrs. So-and-so sent this card. Isn't this really nice? Her son is going to come to school here in September. They're going to look out for your child. they're going to make sure your child gets what they need, because most families don't do those things. And people remember that. And if you talk to other parents who find that their child is doing, has gotten what they needed, have been treated differently or very well, they've done things that other parents don't do. And one of them is say thank you to people. At the holidays, they bring up some cookies for the teacher. All of those things matter, because you want your child to be seen differently. You want to be seen differently than all the other parents. And the reason for that is, at the end of the day, your child's entitled to the same services as everybody else. However, I'm a teacher in a classroom, and all of a sudden I'm told by the principal of the school, well, the speech therapist went on maternity leave. So I can only give speech right now to the kids, to about half the kids in your room. He's going to ask the teacher, or she's going to ask the teacher, well, which kids should we give it to? If I'm the teacher, I'm going to make sure that the children whose parents have visited me, who have been involved in that school or my classroom, those kids get those services, because I don't want you calling me up or sending me an email and start yelling at me because your child didn't get speech service. Because I know that there are other parents in this room, it's sad to say that, who haven't ever spoken to me. And their child is entitled to those services. Yes, absolutely. But at the end of the day, I'm going to make sure your child gets it, because I know you're going to call me if your daughter didn't get those services today. And that's how the system works. And you need to know all of those things to be able to navigate the system. It's so large, it's so big, that you want to stand out. And I can tell you that if you do even some of these things, you will get a better outcome for your kids. You will ensure that you are the best advocate. You'll be able to get things for your child. It will matter. Because like I said, most people are never thanked for what they do. And a simple gesture, like just sending a thank you card or sending an email that says thank you, will absolutely be remembered. It will make a difference for your child. And the last thing I'll just say to you is believe in yourself. You're your child's best advocate. At the end of the day, everybody else at a meeting can be influenced or affected by someone else's agenda. I think, like I told you, if I'm an administrator at a meeting and you come in and you ask me to send your child to a specialized private school because that's where you'd like your child to go to. I found this private school, it's an approved private school, and I want my daughter to go there because I think she's going to do really well. As an administrator, I'm basically probably going to tell you, oh, we're never going to give you that. We only give children public school placement. And you as the parent say, well, that's not good enough. I'm going to challenge you. But if I represent a district and 100 parents come to me and ask me for private school and I tell them no, human nature says 50 will never even come back to me. After the 50 who come back, maybe 25 say, okay, we'll have our child evaluated. Out of the 25, maybe 10 actually come to an IEP meeting. And I tell all 10, no, we're not giving this. And then maybe the final 10 get a lawyer or they get an advocate and they go to a hearing. If in fact I end up giving away private school to just the 10, how many didn't get the private school? 90. And that's how this system works. You want to be the parent who stands out the most. You want to be the one who says no. You want to be the one who demands your child's rights. You want to make sure that your child gets what they need. You don't want to be one of the 90 who's told, go away, we're not going to give it to you, and you give up. It's not easy. It's very hard. You shouldn't have to do these things. But in order to get what's best for your child, what you believe child needs, you have to stick it out.
Mi nombre es María Osuna. And mi pregunta es, ¿cómo
you have to make sure you're able to. You have to make sure that you do what you need to do to get the best services for your child. And like I said, you're your child's best advocate. You have to remember that always. Thank you. I think I kind of fit within the time frame. I don't know if there's any questions, if anybody might have for me.
Thank you, Chris. We do have time for just a couple of questions.
Sure.
Someone is asking how they can obtain an IEP. It's one of our Spanish speaking parents. So they want to know how to obtain an IEP.
So are they asking for it in a translated IEP, do you know, or just a regular IEP, or?
I'm going to say probably yes, in a different language.
Okay. I mean, the City Department of Education is supposed to translate documents for parents, especially in IEP. So probably the first place to be would be asking the child's teacher. And if not, they should reach out to the Committee on Special Education, sending an email request or a letter requesting a copy of the IEP.
Okay, great. And if a parent needed to get an IEP who's never had one, same process?
So if they've never had an IEP, then they need to send a letter requesting that their child be evaluated. And that usually goes to the Committee on Special Education. They would make a request for their son or their daughter to be evaluated. It could also be that they can send a request to the school itself. It would depend on the age of the child. So if the child is like under the age of 5, you would send it to the Committee on Special Education. If the child is in school already and the parent thinks the child needs special education services, they would probably first be best to talk to the child's teacher or send a letter or an email to the principal at the school requesting the child be evaluated.
Okay, great. Someone also, another parent is asking.
Let me just also say, include NYC, which is a parent advocacy organization. A parent can contact them and they would assist also with getting their child, figuring out how to get the child evaluated, who to reach out to at a school. Yes, sorry.
No, that's okay. Great, thank you. Someone's asking, how does one get academic homework help services for their student, for their child?
Sure, so I know that the Board of Education on their website has some of that information. I also know that I think Advocates for Children has information about the after-school homework helpline. So there are some avenues to that. And I do think also that if you reach out to an agency like Include NYC, they would probably be able to, or parent to parent, they probably would be able to help locate that kind of information.
Okay, great, thank you. Time for two quick questions.
Okay.
Anyone else? Let's see. Hopefully that means someone's typing. So let me just double check and make sure no one has raised their hand. Okay. All right. So I guess since there are no additional questions, let me just say thank you again, Chris, for all the work that you do and have done. We did get a question. Is there a time limit to receive the IEP?
Usually the requirement is that normally, honestly, under law, you shouldn't leave the IEP meeting without it. However, that usually doesn't take place. So usually if you make a request, you should get the IEP within about a week to 2 weeks. If it goes beyond that, I would immediately either ask the principal of the school or contact the Committee on Special Ed and say that you did not receive the IEP. It shouldn't take that long to get a copy.
Okay, I hope that answers the question.
And I think my phone number is listed But right now, actually, I didn't put my email because I don't normally do this support work anymore. But I think like Include NYC, Parent to Parent, Advocates for Children. And I think you have that information, Pat, on some of the resources that the council has. Those would be good places for parents to go to get an advocate or someone to help them out with special ed law or advocacy.
Next week, one, this recording will be available as well as the presentation, the PowerPoint slides. And also later today, you'll see on the QCDD website, the resource guide that's been added digitally. You'll see that posted and also a list of other agencies and stuff, but everything will be posted by next week from this presentation and conversation. All right. So with that said, unless there's a last
second. To the interpreters trying to interpret all this information.
Yes. Thank you to our interpreters, both ASL and language interpreters as well. And this is our last session, and I hope everyone enjoyed this week of the Family Support Conference. And everything will be available Monday, starting Monday. Most of the stuff is already there from earlier in the week. So you will have access to it for a short period of time. So thank you again to our translators, our ASL interpreters, and everyone who came in and joined us this afternoon. And again, thank you again, Chris, for your hard work and the work that you and IAC continue to do for families in New York City.
Thank you. All right.
All right. With that said, enjoy the rest of your day, everyone, and we'll see you next year.
All right.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.